This is a dramatic reading from Genesis chapter 39, verses 1 to 23. It says on here, page 36 of your Old Testament, that I just kind of like to listen, the three of us. I'm the narrator. Now the Ishmaelites had taken Joseph to Egypt and sold him to Potiphar, one of the king's officers, who was the captain of the palace guard. The Lord was with Joseph and made him successful. He lived in the house of his Egyptian master, who saw that the Lord was with Joseph and had made him successful in everything he did. Potiphar was pleased with him and made him his personal servant, so he put him in charge of his house and everything he owned. From then on, because of Joseph, the Lord blessed the household of the Egyptian and everything that he had in his house and in his fields. Potiphar handed over everything he had to take care of Joseph and did not concern to the care of Joseph and did not concern himself with anything except the food he ate. Joseph was well built and good looking, and after a while his master's wife began to desire Joseph and asked him to go to bed with her. He refused.
"Look, my master does not have to concern himself with anything in the house because I am here. He has put me in charge of everything he has. I have as much authority in this house as he has. And he has not kept back anything from me except you. How then could I do such an immoral thing and sin against God?"
Although she asked Joseph day after day, he would not go to bed with her. But one day, when Joseph went into the house to do his work, none of the house servants were there. She caught him by his robe.
"Come to bed with me."
But Joseph escaped and ran outside, leaving his robe in her hand. When she saw that he had left his robe and had run out of the house, she called to her house servants,
"Look at this! This Hebrew that my husband brought to the house is insulting us. He came into my room and tried to rape me, but I screamed as loud as I could. When he heard me scream, he ran outside, leaving his robe beside me."
She kept his robe with her until Joseph's master came home, and then she told him the same story.
"That Hebrew slave that you brought here came into my room and insulted me, but when I screamed, he ran outside, leaving his robe beside me."
Joseph's master was furious and had Joseph arrested and put in prison, where the king's prisoners were kept, and there he stayed. But the Lord was with Joseph and blessed him, so that the jailer was pleased with him. He put Joseph in charge of all the other prisoners and made him responsible, because the Lord was with Joseph and made him succeed in everything he did. So ends the reading of this work.
So now that we have you awake and on the edge of your seat, you're just going to have to hold on for a few moments, because I want to make sure you know who we're talking about. So I'm going to give you a little bit of Bible 101. There are two Josephs in the Bible, so don't get them confused. There is the New Testament Joseph, who appears in your Advent and Christmas stories and becomes the husband of Mary and is important in the birth of Jesus narrative. That is not the Joseph that we're talking about this morning. So everyone's clear on that point. I don't want you to be confused in a few months when we get to that story and figure out, now how do we get from here to there? So who is this Hebrew narrative Joseph? He is the great-grandson of the gentleman you met last week, Abram, who became Abraham. He is one of 12 brothers, born to a man named Jacob. Now, he is the second of the youngest, from the youngest of the brothers. He happens to be daddy's favorite. So you can imagine on the pecking order, if he's number 11 and he's the favorite, that doesn't sit well with a whole lot of other brothers. Daddy blessed him with a beautiful coat, what you've known as the coat of many colors. You probably have heard that about this Joseph. And he also was a dreamer. You're going to learn a little bit more about that today. Throughout his life, he seemed to be a dreamer. And he told his brothers these amazing dreams of how he was going to lord it over them. So you can imagine how well that went in the household. They really hated him. So they decided one day they had had enough of this pesky little brother, and they devised the plan to get rid of him. But they didn't want to physically kill him and have that sin on their hands. So instead, they just sold him off into slavery and pretended his death. So they took that beautiful coat, dipped it in the sheep's blood, took it home to Dad and said, "Sorry, he was attacked by some wild animals out working in your fields and he's now gone." They meant he was dead when they said that to the father, not gone into slavery. So they put their father in grief unnecessarily with this lie that they told, and they shipped their brother off to some slave traders who ended up taking him to Egypt, and that's where the story begins. So it's a pretty dramatic story. If you don't know your Bible too much, you might be a little surprised that a story like that appears in the sacred text, but it's there along with a few others like it, sprinkled in and out just to wake you up if you're trying to do some long-term Bible reading and it's getting boring. These stories can kind of wake you up. But I'm going to skip over the salacious part of this story, which most people preach about because that makes for exciting preaching. But as you heard us do that little narration, it's a lot like what you've been hearing in your evening news or reading in your morning paper, isn't it? It's got a little contemporary slant to the story. We're in sort of a he said, she said situation, and who might be true? So I'm going to unpack this story for you, but I'm not going to gloss on to that. I want to look at Joseph. Because in the three movements of the text, there is something that we learn about him and how he shapes his character through each of those movements. And I think it may be a good point in our cultural history to spend a few moments talking about how does one shape one's character? When does your character count? So in the first movement of the story, we have Joseph, who's now been bought out of the slave yard by a man named Potiphar. All we really know about him is he was some Egyptian official, obviously a man of some wealth because he had a large household and he had many servants, so that right there tells us he was a man of means. Like any new slave, Joseph began out in the fields. He did the hard work that no one else wanted to do. Might be like day laborers today, being stuck with the jobs that none of us really care about doing. That's the kind of work he would do. But obviously, he did his work well and got noticed by the boss. And the boss saw something special in this young man, saw his work ethic, saw something about his personality and nature that he brought him into the house. But in time, he not only just brought him into the house to work, he ended up running the household. So he is given a great deal of level of trust because of who he is and how he works. And in the text, we're told that God used Joseph to bless others because of his work ethic, his willing to go above and beyond what was asked of him. He gave more than 100% to his work, and it was noticed, and it paid off. He came into the household, and he began to manage it well, and Potiphar and his family began to have many blessings because of Joseph and their life. He blessed others by the way he lived. It's point number one about building character. Could that be said about you and I? Would someone say about you that you have blessed them by being in their life? I would hope that we're all trying to live with that being the case. That we're out there doing good for the world in which we live. We're helping our neighbor. We're doing well at our work. We're productive citizens. We're trying to make our little corners of the world a better place. That's what Joseph did, even in some of the hardest of circumstances. He continued to try to make his little corner of the world a better place. And he was known for his giving blessings, for his changing lives. How well are we known for doing that? The second movement of the story is the one that woke you up. It's the exciting part of the drama. It's this give and take between Mrs. Potiphar and Joseph. She has his eye on him. She wants to seduce him and bring him to her bed. He could have very easily gone along with that, right? Perhaps nobody would have ever known and been the wiser. How many times has that happened in the world? And I think it's very interesting what Joseph says at this point in the narrative. He could have done a couple of things. He could have said to her, no, I don't want to violate your marriage commitment and covenant and get us both into trouble. He could have said, you know, your husband has put a great deal of trust in me, and I certainly don't want to break that trust. But no, he did something even more unusual, I think. In the text in your Bible, he asked it as a question. How could I do this grievous sin against God? How could I do this action against God? What if we applied that moral standard to all of our decision making? Some of you know John Wooden, who was the great UCLA basketball coach. He's attributed to saying this quote, but I've seen it in similar form for others, so who knows who really said it. But the quote basically goes like this. Shape of a true character of any person is what he or she does when someone is not looking. Well, I'm going to put a little spiritual twist on that thought. I would say the true shape of our character is what we do when we know that God is looking. Because God's always watching. What if we kept that as a moral compass in our decision making? Think of all the heartache that might just prevent. Think of all the damage that might be left undone because you were willing to use that as your guide and decision maker. You know, when you go off and do things you shouldn't do, you got to do a whole lot of backtracking sometimes to get out of it. Make up some little stories and lies to cover up. Often you have to go back and repair a lot of damage that's done. You spend a whole lot of energy cleaning up your mess that you have made. So what if, like Joseph, we were wise enough to say that question to ourselves anytime we're put in a situation like this? How could I do this grievous sin against God? You know, that's a very important question to ask when you're trying to build your character. And right now, with all the stories you've heard in the past years about people who've let their characters get just disreputable, think of how better off they would have been, and we might have been, had they used that type of moral compass. The third movement of the story and the final piece that strikes me about Joseph is something that does sometimes happen. He told the truth. But the truth did not keep him from dire circumstances. Because in these he said, she said situations, how are you ever going to know what is actually true? But all you can do in those situations is stand with your own conviction and know that your yes is yes. And your truth is truth. And you may pay a price for it sometimes. People may not believe you, as in the case of today's text. People might use that against you, as in the case of today's text. You may pay a heavy price for it, as in the case of today's text. Joseph's telling the truth. Where did that end him up? In prison. And yes, he was incarcerated, but he still had his integrity because he had his truth. They could not take that from him. And I imagine there have been others who've been imprisoned like Joseph who have told the truth and it was never believed. And they too have been behind bars. But even God came into that situation and used his integrity. And that's the key element of this point. It may be bad at first, but somehow the truth will come to light. God used that situation of evil for good. Remember I told you Joseph was a dreamer? Well, when he was in prison, he started having dreams. And much like he had done to win Potiphar's confidence, he was doing good. He must have been an exemplary prisoner because the jailer paid notice of Joseph. And he started listening to these dreams that Joseph was telling that he had. And the dreams were about Egypt. And Egypt going into a famine. And the jailer paid attention to that. So much attention that he ran to the Pharaoh, who is the head of Egypt, and said, I got a prisoner we need to pay attention to. He's a dreamer. He's not caused me any trouble. And I think we need to hear his dreams. He's predicting a famine that's going to wreak devastation on us and our neighboring countries. I think we need to listen to this and maybe get prepared. Pharaoh met Joseph, came to the prison, heard his dream, and decided this young man had something of merit to say. Brought him out of prison, put him in charge of the whole government program to prepare for a 7-year famine. So Joseph had them bring all their grain and store it into storehouses. And when that famine did come, as it did, he was able to feed the Egyptian people and save their lives. And if you know the story, you know it didn't end there. His family and his kinspeople were starving to death. They heard about Egypt and a smart fella who had figured out how to save some grain to feed the Egyptians. So they thought, let's go to Egypt and see if we can borrow a little bit of grain to survive. They had no idea that the person who was about to save their life was their brother that they sold off into slavery. But he was able to save his family as well. Out of his integrity, he was able to change the world. Can we say that about our own integrity? So I'm simply going to end with 4 things that I think are important if you want to build your character. The first and the last, I think, are the most important. The first is to live with the Lord in your heart at all times. Joseph did that. The choir sang a beautiful anthem about that. I hope you'll listen to those words again today in your soul as you go through the day about how you let your truth, as they sang about, protect you. Live with the Lord in your heart at all times. The second is I think we would be wise if we learn to speak no evil of other people. Do you want anyone saying bad things about you? I can't imagine you do. So why would we do that for others? Speak no evil of others. Connected to that is do no harm to your neighbor. Is that not a biblical teaching? Do no harm to your neighbor. Where would our world be if every human lived with that as a character-building trait? Do no harm to your neighbor. And the final one might sound way too simple, but it may be the most important of the list. If you want to be a person of truth, if you want to hold on to your integrity, if you want to have a strong character with a foundation that cannot be shaken, then this is what you must do. At all times and all situations, your yes must be yes, and your no must be no. You have to hold on to your truth. Anytime you waver off of that, you're getting into trouble. Let your yes be yes and your no be no. I'm going to give you one final piece of wisdom. It comes from Thomas Paine. And he said this about character, and I'll repeat it twice. Your character is much easier kept than recovered. Your character is much easier kept than recovered. That's the whole point of today's story. Joseph was able to keep his character. And that makes all the difference in the world. Amen.